What does it actually mean to be truly global to the extent we can, local, national, and international simultaneously, east, west, north, south, but from a place of actual growth and empathy? And this is where, again, this questions of consciousness come in. The questions of cultivating empathy, cultivating compassion, cultivating awareness, the complete antithesis of social media modes, long-term thinking, compassion, seeing complexity, comfort with oneself, solitude, the opposite of instant gratification, the attempt to constantly humanize and not dehumanize your fellow humans. These are all completely countervailing forces to the market technologic that subsumes all of us today.
It is Friday, July 24th, 2020. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our Capitol muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. But today, Sean's not here. He's MIA. That's right. Where is he? I'll tell you, he is painting his hometown of Horsham red. That's right. But I want to give everybody a little bit of heads up here because Sean's birthday is on July 31st. So my guess is this is like a little bit of a, you know, early birthday fun for Sean. But I want to make sure everyone gets that message and wishes him a happy birthday next week. It's on the 31st. Anyways, on today's show, we lost such an important voice on the left this week. Michael Brooks, who you heard in the intro today. He died suddenly on Monday at the age of 36. Michael was a co-host of the Majority Report and a host of his own show, the Michael Brooks Show, better known as TMBS. In many ways, Michael was just getting going. It's like rest in power, brother. And I'll tell you, his passing on Monday it hit me hard in ways that I hadn't expected, and it's really left me reflecting about a lot of stuff, which I'll talk a little bit about today, but... In other news, Trump is calling for a surge of federal forces into American cities, extending his Portland model, a brutal suppression of dissent and abduction of activists. Yes, and guess what? Philly is one of the cities that Trump is targeting for the surge, but DA Larry Krasner says he will pursue criminal charges against federal officers who violate the constitutional rights of activists or break city, state, or federal laws around policing. Frickin' go at it. He's the first one in the country to say he's going to pursue criminal charges. Way to go. And meanwhile, while in Portland, you know, you hear about the Wall of Moms? Well, the Wall of Moms has been freaking amazing, right? These women, kind of in many cases suburban women, some older women are coming out to protect the activists by having the Wall of Moms between the police and the activists. It's freaking amazing. But guess what? This week, the dads finally got off the couch to join the moms in the streets. They brought their leaf blowers. Yep, they brought the leaf blowers to the barricades, and they blew the smoke from tear gas back in the direction of the police. It's freaking awesome. I'm telling you, the creativity that's happening in... Well, a couple things. The creativity in Portland and the widening of the coalition around Black Lives Matter and on the force of the kind of, you know, defunding the police is just... we got to be paying attention to that, is what I'm saying. Well, and it turns out that material reality does register at some level in the brain of our Cheeto-in-Chief. Yep, Trump announced that he is canceling the Republican convention in Jacksonville next month. And the move, you know, came pretty clear after, you know, he knew he was going to be facing about half-empty rooms, lawsuits, and some strict health regulations. Right. Trump said the timing of the event was just not right, given the stuff happening here. You know, given the explosion of the coronavirus virus cases in Florida. Now, Florida is now the epicenter, the global epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak. I mean, it's freaking crazy. But, you know, instead, he's going to go be giving a speech at a gathering in Charlotte, North Carolina instead. Yep, not quite a convention, but he'll get a speech at least. He's going to why North Carolina? Well, you know, because North Carolina doesn't have any cases, zero of COVID-19. Oh, wait, that's not right. Yeah, that's right. North Carolina is also one of these places that has that big explosion of cases, right? Yeah. So there you go, Charlotte. Whatever. A little bit closer to home today in today's second segment. This past Monday, 717 Restaurant Workers United, they held a takeout takeover at Cork and Fork in Harrisburg. The union organizing campaign is taking a community organizing approach to unionizing Cork and Fork workers and is looking to organize restaurant workers in the Harrisburg area. It's very interesting. Monday's action was also supported by the DSA local out there. And so on Monday, we've got our new feature here at Raging Chicken. We've got our live show, which will be airing every Monday night at 7 p.m., 7 p.m. Eastern, for those of you that are on the West Coast. Mondays at 7 p.m., we're going to have some organizers from 717 Restaurant Workers United. And I believe we're also getting someone, one of the organizers from Harrisburg DSA, to talk a little about the action and the perspective about organizing restaurant workers in the Harrisburg area. And there's some cool stuff going on here. Edinburgh University is the latest posh university to go all remote for the fall. Yep. That's number three. So that's up in Erie. We got East Stroudsburg. You got Westchester. And, you know, my University of Kutztown is just going to, like, do its best to bury its head in the sands. Well, guess what? They're gonna be facing some serious issues. Also, we've got a new town hall coming up at Kutztown University by the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights. And you've heard me talk about the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights on this program before. But that will be on the 5th of August. There's going to be a town hall. I have more information about that next week, especially. We're going to really foreground that town hall is coming up. But the organizing efforts by students and faculty and staff are kind of increasing at Kutztown University and across the university or the state system of higher education. It's been really interesting to see the explosion of grassroots, ground-up organizing that's taking place. And parents and school systems, for that matter, are starting to get anxious as the back-to-school system kicks into high gear. I know Bucks County, down here in Bucks County, where they're all over the place. Where my own school district, the Pennridge School District, is trying to figure out what's going to be right. And they're doing a little hemming and hawing because they're just, look, I mean, they feel like they're kind of out there on their own. Meanwhile, the Central Bucks School District just did an about-face, and now they're kind of like, they're kind of went from a hybrid model to all online. They're just switching all this stuff around. So we just don't know what's going to happen. And today's last call, NASA's Perseverance Mars rover is expected to launch next Thursday, July 30th. That's one day before Sean's birthday, just in case you just want to need that reminder. When Perseverance rover gets launched, you go, oh yeah, tomorrow's Sean's birthday. This rover is going to be running on nuclear power. Matter of fact, it's a nuclear reactor or nuclear power source, however they're calling it, just was installed this week. And now it's on the launch pad down there in Florida. Let's just hope there's no mishap because, I mean, last thing Florida needs right now is to have a nuclear-powered rover blow up over the state. I mean, or really ever. It doesn't need to be just now, but, you know, come on. It's pretty crazy. And, you know, in today's beer news, I stepped out of my little Percocy bubble this week and ordered some beer from Levante Brewing Company. And that's based down in Westchester, PA. And, you know, Free Will has done some collabs with them. And, you know, I know they're kind of, you know, they know each other and stuff like this. And I said, you know what, I should really broaden out my area. So I ordered some from them. And you can order online and have them delivered. And so today I'll give you a little review of Tropical Whip, which is a pineapple sundae IPA. DOPE, or D-O-P-E. It's an acronym and stands for Doctrine of Phonetic Equivalence. And that is an awesome, awesome triple IPA. And last but not least, Tickle Parts. Yep, that's a fantastic Northeast IPA. Northeast IPA. So, tell you a little bit about those. Also got a little swag from them, too, as well. I mean, I bought it, to want to be clear. I'm not doing that. But don't worry, I won't neglect Free Will. Got to represent, you know. And I'll give you the breakdown of some of their latest offerings and what you can find at their store, too. And in other Percocy news, that's right, Percocy, right? Well, who knew? Right, we're getting a second brewery here. Mystic Ways Brewing will be opening a brewery, taproom, and beer garden at 510 and a half West Walnut Street, and that's right near the center of Percocy. It's across from the little convenience store, right next to Modern Male Barbershop. Yeah, over there. I want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in to Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Make sure you download the Rick Smith Show's daily podcast on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. I want to remind you, if you need... We want a progressive future. We need progressive media. You can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We're expanding our network as we prepare for the fight of our lives, or the fight of the future in 2020, and we're all in for this fight. And now we need you. We're not asking you to break the bank. We're asking you to become a member for the price of a good beer once a month. Not bad. Help keep the media in the movement, and the movement in the media. Become a member as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress. today. So Sean emailed me or he messaged me kind of yesterday, day before, said, oh yeah, I can't do the show on Friday. So for those folks who are tuning in to hear Sean's amazing analysis every week, I'm sorry, you're stuck with me. A couple things to start us off. The passing of Michael Brooks is a huge loss for the progressive media community and really for the left in general right now. For those of you who don't listen to the Majority Report, I mean, Michael's been the host of Majority or a co-host. He started out as their producer, but he's really a co-host of the show for years now, certainly as long as I've been listening to the show. And Michael was known on the show initially as he just would do these hilarious impressions of these mashups of kind of right wing Mandela, for example, was this hilarious kind of mashup that he came up with after some of these kind of right wing Republicans basically making the claim that they were like Mandela. And so he's like, oh, yeah, that's right. The libertarians are like Mandela. And so he came up with this right wing Mandela. I mean, he had these amazing impressions that were just super politically astute and the kind of stuff that could knock you over laughing. It was so funny. And in recent years, Michael Brooks launched his own show, again, supported by the Majority Report crew. Called the Michael Brooks Show, which is, he promotes always as TMBS, which is, it's one of these few, I guess they're going to continue the show. His sister is really working hard with his producer, and Matt Lack, who's also producer of the Majority Report, to keep the show going. But his show was one of the few places that it had academic rigor, but from a grounded left organizational space. And I know this, I'm using these really amorphous words. And basically what I mean is this, is that guy, and I really grew to appreciate this kind of over the years. Michael Brooks knew so much about so much, right? He was the guy, one of the leading voices in the United States of bringing attention to what was happening in Brazil with Lula, the imprisonment of Lula, and what Lula's legacy is, and to the point where he was able to he was invited down to Brazil to interview Lula. But he was just kind of tapped in that way. And the guy just read so much about so much, and he would go on these at times it would feel like these stream of consciousness rambles, right? But really what he was doing, was he was connecting up movements and history as kind of feeding in, helping us understand and feed into where we are now in terms of political action or organization. And I mentioned up at top, I didn't know Michael Brooks at all, except online, I don't think we've even ever exchanged anything online or anything like this. But just, followed him closely and followed that kind of trajectory in the Majority Report. I listened to the podcast, TMBS, in addition to him on the Majority Report. He had just started up a weekend show through Jacobin called Just Weekends, I think is what it was called, with Anna Kasparian. And that show, once again, last weekend, I was listening to this last night. I couldn't get to sleep. I was thinking about him last night. And I watched the show, that his last aired show with Anna Kasparian from last week. And I think it was Robert McChesney, or maybe that was 2 weeks ago. But I listened to his last show, listened to the show with Robert McChesney, who's, of course, you know, one of the most important media critics, left media critics in the country. And it was just, the conversations were just fantastic. And, you know, he was really beginning to, I don't know, it just felt like he was, you know, that, to use my Space News metaphor, that rocket on the launch pad, you know, I mean, it already ignited to go. And it was snuffed out way, way too early. He was 36 years old. And there was initially a lot of speculation, but it was a blood clot in his neck that nobody saw coming. If you watch the Majority Report, you know, on Monday, they had to stop the show suddenly because they were getting news over Twitter about what was going on. And it was really devastating. They had a, you know, if you followed Michael at all, you haven't listened to the Majority Report's show for Tuesday, which was just like a 4 hour long call on people coming and talking about Michael Brooks. And I did listen to that. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's been sitting so much with me. I mean, I didn't find out about it until after our first live show on Monday. I got a message from Sean. And Sean said, Michael Brooks died. I'm like, what the? The thing that the reason why I've been really reflective about Michael's death and his life really is because, you know, I didn't know, like I said, I didn't know him personally, but hearing people talk about the impact that he had and it gave me a very different perspective on how I understood his work and legacy. I mean, he would just go out of his way to be kind to people, to help people, to help them get started. He'd pull them in. That's just stories you heard again and again about like how important he had become to kind of reminding them of like the importance of kindness. And there's this great quote that, you know, I had up on our Instagram this week was, he said, be ruthless to systems, but kind and forgiving to people. And it's like, just at that kind of, that level of clarity. And he was also talking about how he would always reach out to people and kind of follow up with people, and how he would just kind of drop in and say, hey, how you doing? And, you know, and I maybe reflect a lot upon my headspace in organizing, I think, is a way to put it, for the past, I don't know, probably 5 years or so. I felt like, for just, I don't know, local organizing reasons, you know, I felt like I'd get burnt out. I mean, I don't think I'd realize how burnt out I was until this summer, actually, for a long time. And, you know, I felt cynical and despairing at times. And, you know, after saying things and trying to help people, try to organize and trying to, and just having people just kind of ignore you, or you just like do exactly opposite of what you think would be the most important for actually building power, right? And then just, you know, whatever, some professional stuff that just kind of like kept on falling through until, you know, so it was like, I had the space of certain kind of, it wasn't quite despair. It was just exhaustion. And it was hard to hope. And, you know, listening to the people talk about what Michael Brooks was doing and his belief and how he would always echo to people about the importance of the human, right? Of being human and kind to people. And his clarity that, you know, we cannot be organizing from a position of fantasy. I mean, he'd be the first one on the barricades for a revolution, right? You know, but at the same time, he's like, that's not where we're at. And people have got to get out of this fantasy thinking that's, you know, somehow like talking, like, you know, using quotes from Marx's Capital is going to kind of bring about the revolution. That's not. You know, he understood the importance of being embedded and connected to our culture. And, you know, and he grew up, this last thing I'll say is like, you know, he's told the story a few times about growing up poor. Right. And, you know, he's always clear, you know, he had better than like millions of other people across the world, certainly. But, you know, missing meals, time, being on assistance, Section 8 housing, things like this. And he understood, and he talked to, we would talk about this, about the fear or the anxiety, the threat, really, of hunger. You know, and that felt always really real and front and center to him. You know, when I always listen to his stuff. And, you know, it's funny because I'm always very critical of this, about this notion when people say, you know, the family, you know, when they talk about an organization or an institution is like a family, especially, you know, Kutztown University where I work, they always do this, you know, the Kutztown family, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't realize until, you know, Michael passed that how much he felt like part of my whatever media family. He was a character that was kind of not a character, you know, I don't mean to limit him like that. I mean, he was a person that was in my life in a way that felt really important to me. And, you know, Sean, if Sean was here, I mean, he would, he, you know, he could confirm that there were times I would get frustrated as all hell, with Michael. Right. I will own that 100%. It was less than what he was saying and that kind of stuff, but rather, sometimes when he would get on these long discussions, these, what I was talking about, these rambling connection things, it echoed some of the kind of academic engagement that I was just getting exhausted with. It had nothing to do with what it was actually saying. But I realized, and Sam Cedar said this too as well, as you know, he said he always felt like that's what it must mean to have, like, he always felt with Michael's like he was like a younger brother. He really was like family to him. And you'd get frustrated with each other at times, you'd get angry at times, you'd laugh, and yet, you know, it was all over the place, but you never doubted that connection, right? You never, like, you get mad at him and you get mad and you get, you know, Sam was talking about this and you get upset and that kind of stuff, and you'd never go after him, right? And then say, we're gonna break ties, something like that. It was a real sense of siblings, right? And, you know, and I don't want to kind of like overstate this, but, you know, in some ways is that's kind of in the media environment and stuff I listen to, that's kind of the way he felt. Like, you know, there'd be times I get frustrated as hell with what he was saying, but I would tune in, you know, I'd go back and I'd listen because I respected the hell out of what he was doing. Even when I would get frustrated or have disagreements with some of the things he said, I mean, he was an amazing individual. And I'm going to really miss him, and I'm going to miss what he could have done. Could have helped do for all of us, really. I mean, you know, his importance was to the left broadly, right? To struggles against hunger, struggles against capitalism, struggles for justice, and most humane levels. So rest in power, brother. Rest in power. Boy, it's kind of hard to move from there. But I just, it's been dominating my entire week in just in terms of my own thoughts. So, but this week was huge, right? One of the things that we saw this week, right, what was going on in Portland, the Portland, I mean, the protests in Portland have been going on for 50 some odd days, I believe, right? We're at this point. They've taken on a different kind of character. And I know there's a lot of back and forth that's happening online right now saying that, you know, the Portland protests have gotten away from the messages of Black Lives Matter, and of this kind of like this narrow way of thinking about stuff, or not narrow way, but, you know, really is targeted way, I mean, of thinking about, you know, defunding the police or so on. But I would encourage you, like this again, I'm going to plug the Benjamin Dixon show once again, is I'd encourage you to listen to Benjamin Dixon and his take on this stuff. I found myself nodding my head as he was talking the other day about how important it is to, you know, to be cautious of those folks who are either class reductionists or race reductionists. And what he was saying was that those folks who say, hey, you know, making connections with class or organizing more broad base beyond just the category of race, and whether disciplining you for that, don't trust those people. Right. And the folks that are saying, no, it's just capitalism, race is just, you know, is one of the features. It's really capitalism, and they don't want to deal with race. Don't trust those folks. It's only those folks. I mean, again, we've talked about intersectionality kind of extensively. Right. I mean, it's those folks who are seeing these things as integral. And this is why I think Benjamin Dixon's voice is so important right now. So what's happening in Portland is, yes, it's true that it's got, you know, we don't have this narrow focus on defunding the police there, right? It's not just that anymore, right? Now it is about, you know, I mean, in part, it's because Donald Trump, right, sent, you know, basically unmarked federal forces into the streets of Portland against the wishes of all local officials, at least as far as we know at this point. You know, against those the wishes and desires of those folks, and started like abducting activists on the street, right? And you've probably seen the video, kind of activists being pulled off the street and being beaten in many cases. Portland's police have basically an injunction against their the use of tear gas. They're not allowed to use it, but the federal forces sure as hell are. And they're the ones who are using the rubber bullets. They're the ones who are using the tear gas. They're the ones who are targeting people, right? I was listening to some folks last night. We were talking about how they have spotters, basically, right, up on roofs for these federal forces, using laser lights, right, to kind of target individuals for rubber bullets and stuff like this, right? So they're putting a mark on them, and boom, 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 right? They're getting shot with all sorts of a series of things. There was that other guy who got basically, you know, one of these federal forces. And again, they have no identifying signatures on them. You don't really know if you're an activist and you're sitting there, and they won't identify themselves. They don't tell you who they are. They're not wearing any recognizable uniform or markings or names or badge numbers or anything like this. They're driving around in rented white vans, pulling people off the street. You don't know if these folks are some of these freaking nut job right wing militia folks, or if they're actually real legit police. Right, not that it makes it any better either way, but that's supposed to be one of the whole idea. Remember the whole idea about occupying troops, right? You know, part of the American Revolution. Well, this is now, once again, we see, like, you know, the king's forces. Right, this is like, you know, the shock troops that are being. And again, this is what the Trump organization has done as soon as it began occupying our federal government. Right, as soon as that began, as his administration began occupying our federal government. They've constantly looked for ways. They basically said, how can I use my authority, right? I need creative ways to use my authority that gets around whatever we're looking at. In this case, gets around some of the restrictions that are being placed on police as there's legit uprisings happening across the country, right? So now, after what we've seen in Portland, right, there was just Trump just announced, right, once again, that we're going to see he wants to have a surge of police, right? And this, of course, is, you know, Attorney General William Barr, the head of our Justice Department, is at the forefront, right, of making this stuff happen, right? I would not, you know, you remember, you know, what happened in Washington, D.C., when Trump wanted to go get his little, you know, nice little picture taken in front of a church holding a Bible upside down, or awkwardly at least, you know, Barr basically ordered kind of the tear gassing of protesters and clearing of the streets, right, before a curfew or anything like that. And so this is, you know, got William Barr's markings all over it. But now he's talking about, you know, Trump is talking about sending additional troops into, you know, into Chicago, into Philadelphia, and this is just not a good thing. This is, you know, I've talked a lot about, you know, science fiction and stuff on here, but this is kind of as science fiction-y as it gets, is that when you actually have these, you know, if this was Central America, this would be the prelude to the death squads, right? These are these kind of, looks like secret police. It's like the Stasi, right? You don't know who these people are, right? They're taking people off off the street. They're throwing them in the back of vans. They're not charging them. They're not telling them who they are. They're black bagging them, putting them, you know, like blindfolding them. There was, you know, the story of the one kid who was kind of pulled off the streets and was videoed, and he was like, you know, had blindfolded with his own hat and handcuffed him, and he couldn't see where he was going, didn't know where he was. They never told him he was going to get charged. And then they eventually kind of release him. I mean, you imagine the impact that's going to have on you? It's going to freak you the fuck out. So, That's crazy. Now, the good thing is that you've got some amazing resistance that is happening kind of in Portland. And, you know, even before what was happening in Portland, you began to see solidarity protests that were cropping up across the country, Philadelphia being one of them. These protests in solidarity with what's happening in Portland and what's happening with the expansion of federal forces, right, and police. In my mind, you know, well, some people talk about this as a distraction, right? I'm like, in my mind, this makes their point even more. Right. This shows you, and this again, this is Benjamin Dixon's point. This shows you the absolute alliance between our current model of capitalism, free market fundamentalist capitalism, right, and the police state. This is, you know, more and more the kind of like the trappings or the kind of, you know, the nice clothes that are put on either one of those things have been stripped away. Right. So on the one hand, you've got the kind of, you know, the concentration of wealth like we've never seen before, while people are basically thrown into the coronavirus meat grinder and are going to be, you know, thrown out on the streets. Right. Assuming that at the, you know, next week, a lot of these anti-eviction moratoriums that are out there, or eviction moratoriums that have been out in place, they expire. Right. Unemployment benefits begin to expire. Right. So people are going to be thrown into the meat grinder of work, in the meat grinder of the virus. Right. They're going to have to do it out on the streets, trying to figure out where the hell they're going to live. Right. So we see that veil being stripped away. And meanwhile, we see people like Jeff Bezos. I know he's an easy target. Right. But these folks, these absolute billionaires who soon to be our first trillionaire. Right. Something like this. He is made record profits personally. He personally benefited over the coronavirus, personally benefited over the redistribution of wealth upward, right? These folks are doing fine. And meanwhile, the baseline security of most people is like hanging in the balance. You know, and this is why, you know, I know people get frustrated sometimes when we talk about, we're critical of the Democrats, but I mean, I don't know what you're doing here, is that, you know, as the protests were like rising, right? What we saw was happening in Portland as Trump was sending in federal troops there. Democrats were actually looking for like ways of helping the Republicans expand the surveillance powers. I mean, Ryan Grimm wrote about this in The Intercept this week. But more than that is like when you're talking about the stimulus thing, it's like, let's remember the Democratic Party controls the House, right? They set the agenda for the House. Right. And why in God's name that you have the Democrats are putting forward like these like half measures or trying to be like fiscally conservative at this freaking time in history is beyond me. And there's these people that start chirping in that start saying like, well, you know, the Senate, the Republican dominated Senate is never going to pass that. That's on them. That's why you set a bold agenda in the House. So that you're pushing that forward and then you're out in the damn streets arguing for that. Mobilizing, organizing around that, putting more pressure on the Senate, right? You want those people to have that around their neck. When people lose their unemployment benefits, right? You don't want to be a collaborator. You want the enemy to be clear. You want to look at the Senate Republicans and say, you are the enemy. You are our enemy. We already know Donald Trump is the enemy. Except for that freaking whatever 25-35% of the people who are just, you know, whatever. They're lost to us. You want them to be the enemy. You need clarity. Right? That's why you got the kind of the wall of moms in Portland, right? Protecting protesters. Right? In the fight for Black Lives in Portland, you have a wall of moms, suburban moms. I mean, because they're coming not in our city, not your federal troop. Get at the hell out of here. You will not beat them. And guess what? The police are beating them anyways. And there's been some images coming up about some of the, you know, going after the moms, right? But when you do that, and then the moms get even more pissed, that's great. And then to see now the dads coming out with their, I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of the videos of that. You can check out some of the links in the show notes today. But coming out with leaf blowers was absolutely freaking brilliant. I mean, that was just like awesome. So, what happens in Portland, man? You know, I think what's going to – a lot of these solidarity protests that are happening across the country are paying a lot of attention to what's going on in Portland. And I'll tell you right now, it's very clear that some of those activists in Portland have been watching very carefully some of the protests that have been happening in Hong Kong. You see some tactics that are being borrowed from what's happening in Hong Kong, which is amazing, as the seeds of a kind of a globalized consciousness in and localized resistance. This is really, really important, kind of moving forward. And I mean, I don't know. I am so excited. I have to say this too, as well, is that I've put this off for a while. Okay, I'm going to talk about TikTok just so you know. Okay. I remember for a while ago, because, you know, especially when kids start using it and things like that, I have two young kids, you know, I've got an 11-year-old and a 7 or 8-year-old, and, you know, you start hearing them doing the school and thing. And look, I mean, I study social media, I teach social media and things like this. And, so part of me professionally think, okay, I need to at least be aware of these things and how they work and that kind of stuff. But then also when I'm talking about my own kids, I mean, I want to see how it works so I understand. I want to be that, you know, that person, you know, that parent who gets caught like on their heels because I'm not paying attention to actually what's going on. But and I'll say this. So, you know, I went into TikTok, this was a while ago. This is probably, God, it was like back in January. And I looked at it, and I'll tell you, I'll be perfectly honest with you. It was the kind of like, my initial thought was it kind of freaked me out. I wasn't on it very long because, I didn't understand enough about, you know, just the algorithm of the, how things, it shows up like the For You page and this kind of stuff in TikTok. But, so when, if you just log in for the first time, you know, I just, it was like a constant stream of, you know, my kids are down here. A stream of like, you know, half clad or barely clad people, kind of young women, probably, you know, dancing. That was showing up in my feed, and then, you know, some stuff was really inappropriate. I'm like, this just makes me uncomfortable even being on this platform, so I left it. But after hearing a lot about Gen Z and everything, and then understanding a little bit more about the way that the platform worked, I kind of went back on through Raging Chicken. And, you know, quickly went and followed as many kind of Black Lives Matter stuff as possible, as protest stuff, kind of lefty stuff, DSA, all that kind of stuff. And now finally I have a feed that doesn't look like, you know, some invitation to like, you know, debauchery or something. And the reason why I'm saying all this is because I have so much hope after seeing Gen Z. And, you know, I want to give a whole lot of credit to millennials that are out there too as well, because I think, you know, millennials, you all set the stage for Gen Z to take the reins. And millennials, you've got the numbers, right? And Gen Z, man, it's just like, you've got, it's like, look, we're done. We don't believe the lies. We didn't start with believing the American dream. We knew it was a lie to get go from the get go, right? You tell us police are our friend. We've seen otherwise every day. You say Second Amendment rights. We have to deal with like school shootings. I saw this video the other day. It's like we're talking about health insurance or something like this, right? And there's a picture of this young woman, like, climbing behind the like her washing machine in her house, or kind of hiding behind the, like hiding in the cupboards, right? So we may not know how to do like this with the learn how to do, or even like do our taxes or get medical treatment in this country, but we know how, what to do with an active shooter and how to hide, right? And that, I mean, it just kind of condensed in that moment, right? This is the condition that is just the daily normal existence for folks in Gen Z, and they're done with it, right? And that's why we saw that resistance, that, you know, the standing up and the walkouts when it comes to school violence. We're seeing, you know, in Black Lives Matter, the leaders in Black Lives Matter are all, you know, and that around that crew are just freaking amazing. They blow my mind. And so seeing some of that and seeing some of the creativity and the fearlessness, right? Then being supported by the numbers of millennials, right? I can't tell you, as a Gen Xer, this feels glorious to me. And as horrible as our situation is, to see that is a ray of hope. And I think everybody should know that. So I've been talking to myself, both, you know, both within, you know, after what happened with Michael Brooks, what happened with Michael Brooks, and then what's going on in Portland. And I'm just reminding myself constantly of the amazing organizing that is going on. And that gives me hope, and it should give us all hope. That doesn't mean we should sit back and let them have, we need to get in that fight with them. if you're not already. So I appreciate it, man. This has just been, it's been quite a week. It's been quite a week. Last thing I'll say, and I'll kind of, we'll take a little break, is that, yep, the Republican convention is canceled. Yay! I mean, and even, you know, Trump came out this week with a mask, telling people to wear a mask. Whatever joy this gives me, I would just love to hear how those conversations went before he came out and kind of read that statement about wearing a mask and how masks are important. Everyone should wear a mask, right? Not mandating it, right? But, you know, I mean, my theory of it is just, you know, okay, it became clear that more and more of his supporters, right, especially Republicans, like influential Republicans, were basically telling him, look, we're not going. And then he was going to be faced with a half empty room, just like Tulsa, right? Again, Tulsa. Again, credit to the TikTokers, credit to the K-pop fans, and credit to everyone who organized around the Tulsa event to make them think that they had all this kind of amazing. There was going to be like this unbelievable turnout to that event, and it ends up just being a complete flop. I mean, that was one of the huge things. I am sure that Trump was absolutely livid after that, and the prospect of going to Jacksonville and facing the same thing was going to be too much for him, right? I mean, guy's an, you know, egomaniac narcissist, so he's like, you know, that's what all that really matters. So he's gonna, you know, who knows what it's gonna look like in Charlotte, North Carolina, but that's where he's going. And he's going to give some sort of speech accepting the nomination, but that's it. The good news is like this is it's going to take away that fanfare with here. And so far, you know, Joe Biden's strategy of sitting in the bunker all day seems to be working as everything else implodes. I mean, at least when it comes to electoral politics, it has nothing to do with actually setting an agenda or actually organizing, but keeping away is there. I don't know if anybody saw him. I didn't even mention this in the show notes today, but anyone, I don't know if anybody saw him, his interview with Barack Obama that was released this week that came out. It's not an interview. It was a kind of like conversation, right? You know, because that's how Biden got where, you know, that was his whole thing. He's just going to ride in the coattails of Obama, and that was going to hopefully everyone's going to remind everybody of the good old days of Obama. We, of course, here on the left know that those good old days were deeply problematic. But anyways, Obama's was and still is hugely popular among especially kind of, you know, mainstream Democrats or consistent Democratic voters. So, you know, Biden just kind of listened to Obama talk a lot. You know, I think Obama definitely talked more than Biden did in that discussion. But, you know, whatever. Move forward. But so that's good. That's more good news, right? The Democrats are already not planning on doing anything. So if you think about that trajectory politically, right, this becomes important because the Democrats were already following a process of kind of social distancing. They were not going to have this big blowout thing because they knew that, you know, we don't want to spread the coronavirus. So for the Democrats get to do what they were already planning. On the Republican ends of things, this is the second time they've had to move it. Right now they had to cancel the convention outright. So they're taking like loss after loss after loss. It's this backpedaling motion of trying to catch up with reality. And again, the more that people see that, the more that that's important, that reality matters and all the fiction that have been fed to, you know, these, you know, I don't know what you call them. I mean, the cult followers of Trumpism, they are kind of having to kind of deal with a little bit of a dizzying sense of, okay, wait, what's real now? Wait, were you lying to us or what? So that's good. So all forward. Anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to remind you, you become a member of Raging Chicken by going to patreon.com/RC Press. That's patreon.com/RC Press. You become a member today. I hope you're going to tune in on Sunday night too as well at 7 p.m. Eastern for our show. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next segment. But that's been made possible by the support we've had from our listeners. And from folks who have supported the Raging Chicken Project right from the beginning. So thank you. You become a member, $5 a month. Go on to patreon.com/RC Press today. We'll be back right after this break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the first day of a new U.S. labor partnership. the Alliance for Labor Action. The alliance was forged by the president of the United Auto Workers, Walter Reuther, and the president of the Teamsters Union, Frank Fitzsimmons. The UAW had left the AFL-CIO over differences on how to approach labor organizing. The newly formed alliance with the Teamsters stood as a progressive alternative to the AFL-CIO's approach at the time. The ALA called for forming community unions for the millions of poor and unorganized workers. It supported the civil rights movement, as well as the movement against the war in Vietnam. One of the ALA's slogans was, quote, to find answers to the urgent problems of our society. The ALA developed position papers on a series of issues. One of those urgent problems was health care. The ALA described, quote, the United States is the last remaining industrialized country in the world which does not have a national health insurance plan which would assure all its citizens at least minimum guarantee of access to needed medical care. In 1969, the ALA launched its first major organizing drive in Atlanta, Georgia. The drive targeted multiple industries and included a massive advertising campaign. But the Atlanta business community stood in staunch opposition to the unionization effort. Despite some successes, the Atlanta effort did not garner the hoped-for results. The ALA suffered another blow when Walter Reuther died in a plane crash in May of 1970. The alliance disbanded in 1972. Universal health care and many of the other causes championed by the ALA remain unrealized.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. Yes, we are streaming live once again. For those of you folks who are just listening to the podcast and kind of showing up in your name, your regular podcast feed. So no, we're going to try, I'm going to shoot to 10:30, try to keep a 10:30 as the go time. We were a little bit late today. I missed my mark today in part because I just had some weird issues on my computer. So I want to give a shout out to those folks. You've probably heard me talk about this on the show before, but I've been having issues with my computer, several of them. And now, given the fact that a lot of teaching is going to be happening online in the fall, I got to get this fixed. And there's a great group of folks out in Kutztown at Computer Wizards. So I want to give them a shout out. So I'm going to bring them out my computer there on Tuesday. So we'll have the live show on Monday, and then I'll bring it on Tuesday. Just a heads up. So because next Friday, the sound quality might go off a little bit next Friday because I think I've got it set up so that I can actually rig my laptop in here. It shouldn't be too disruptive, but we'll be running the show from that way. So it might be a little bit more scaled down. I might not be able to if I can't get the laptop to run right. We might not be streaming video live on YouTube, but I've got some other ways that we might be work with that. So more on that next week. Anyways, so this past Monday, I had this kind of show up in my inbox in my email about an event that was going on last week, and the event was by this group called 717 Restaurant Workers United, right? And I hadn't heard of them before. That was going on, but so the more I started digging into this. To what they were doing, the more I became interested. So let me just—I want to read through for their press release that came out on Wednesday, and so it says 717 or 717. I'm not sure exactly how to say 717. Restaurant Workers United organized a takeout takeover on Monday, July 20th, 2020. Guests were encouraged to order takeout from either Cork and Fork location in order to show their support for the unionization of restaurant workers. The event was a resounding success due to social media push with the help of Harrisburg DSA and a successful Reddit post with nearly 5,000 likes and 600 comments that garnered the support of restaurant workers nationwide. At the Harrisburg location, takeout sales surpassed $1,900. It's freaking awesome. The West Shore location reported a great amount of support as well. Nicole Miller, a Democratic contender for this Pennsylvania State House of 47th District, was among the many to show up and support the unionization of workers. Tiffany Ramsey and Samuel Weymouth, co-founders of 717 Restaurant Workers United, are overwhelmed the joy of gratitude for all their support. They're excited about the upcoming election and will be held at both Cork and Fork locations, deciding whether or not the workforce will unionize. They hope Cork and Fork can become an industry standard for the area, inspiring other restaurants in the Harrisburg area to unionize. If you work at a restaurant in the Harrisburg area and are tired of not having a voice, visit www.717rwu.org/takeaction to contact 717 Restaurant Workers United, and they will help you fight for fair representation in your workplace. So that's the entire press release that came out. So they sent that, and they kind of reached out. And I look into a little bit more what they're doing, and it's an interesting model, right? I was intrigued about the connection with DSA Harrisburg, or Harrisburg DSA. I was intrigued that the model that they were kind of going with was one that was, we are going to show our support by driving business to this organization, right? To this restaurant that they work at. So it was basically saying to the owners, hey, look, we've got a lot of support out there, and look at the money that they can bring in. Right, they are supporting this move. Right, that makes it that much more difficult to talk about how unionization is going to negatively impact the environment. Right, it's pretty interesting. I also kind of was digging a little bit more into their stuff, and Tiffany Ramsey, who's kind of one of the co-founders, she posted her story on Facebook about kind of what brought her to this point. And both Tiffany Ramsey and Samuel Weymouth have had years in the restaurant industry. And they both talk about it as kind of this this love-hate relationship that the people that you work with, right, are just, you know, it's just an amazing group. And, I worked in the food service industry for years. I didn't work in restaurants. For the vast majority of my time, it was like I worked as, in kind of concessions and catering at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse. I worked with another kind of party catering company that set up parties at, like, of all places, fraternities across the upstate New York. When I went to grad school out in Miami, Ohio, I didn't know anybody out in Ohio. One of the first things I did is I went to the catering place on campus, and I asked, want to see if I get a job, right? I mean, and I think that, once you get in the food service industry, that's one thing, there's always a need, and then you go back into that. And so she tells a little bit of her story about working for, in many cases, absolutely horrific employers, and then having a few instances where you actually you got to see the light about what actually working at a good place, a supportive place, when it cares about its workers, what that can actually feel like, right? And how that actually contributes to the environment of the of the space. So I'm very intrigued about this. So Restaurant Workers United, or 717 Restaurant Workers United, is that they're looking to kind of, target that Harrisburg area. And it's just kind of interesting to see this as an organization that, it reminds me of some of this Restaurant Workers United or, see Rock United organizations that have come up of these kind of workers councils or workers centers that, you're an organization and you're unionizing, right? But there seems to be an attention into the community already. So it's fascinating to me. So I was really excited to know that that I'm going to have someone from 717 Restaurant Workers United on the show, our live show on Monday. So that is going to be Monday at 7 p.m. And that is going to be our regular slot at this point. I like that slot in part one. I can get the dinner for my kids ahead of time. We move into the show, and it gives you just enough time to kind of sit back, think about it, and then get ready for Rick Smith's show at 9. So there you go. Always want to plug Rick, and we'll be plugging Rick from that show. So we'll see. So ideally, I haven't heard back yet from the folks at Harrisburg DSA, but I'm very much hoping that they're going to have someone there to Samuel Weymouth has been great about kind of getting me in touch with folks and scheduling something. We're not sure which one of them is going to go. From what I understand, it's like
with everything going on.
Sorry about that. Is that Tiffany may have some might not be able to make it. She's hoping to be able to make it, so we'll see. If not, I'll probably be speaking with Sam and some representatives from Harrisburg DSA on Monday. So very, very excited. Very excited as that is the kind of the launching point into this kind of more like regular show. Because again, one of the reasons about, you know, if you listen at all to the show from Monday, the live show from Monday, it's really about kind of expanding the conversation that we've been able to kind of construct here on Out the Coop podcast, right? It's about expanding out that community where it's not just, you know, Sean and I's take on thing each week, but actually bringing other people into this conversation. And I'm very much really targeted, really focused on wanting to have people who are actually doing the organizing, right? And I'm sure we're going to have on experts or things like this at some point, but I'm very much interested in people who are actually doing the organizing. If the schedule pans out right, it looks like, and then, so that will be on, what is that? That is the 27th. Monday the 27th is when we're going to have the live show with 717 Restaurant Workers United and Harrisburg DSA. On the 3rd, which is August 3rd, right now it looks like we are going to have some folks on, we're focused on some student organizing or university-based organizing. I know there's been some folks from that I've been working with at Kutztown University from the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights that may be there. We've got some other organizers that are working in Pennsylvania and some other campuses from different angles that I don't want to, you know, lay it out before I've got the commitments for it, but that's kind of the idea for the 3rd. Nice thing about that, as of the 3rd for that organization, that was, you heard me talk about the town hall, the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights town hall on the 5th, August 5th. That'll give us, we'll have some chance to kind of hear a little bit more about that town hall. It's going to take place. It's a virtual town hall that will take place. They had the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights at Kutztown University had a virtual town hall 2 weeks ago, I believe now. And it was a dramatic success. What was amazing about that town hall, I was away, so I wasn't present in that, but hearing some of the organizers talk about it afterwards, a lot of the people who attended were parents of students and parents and faculty members, right? All in the same room talking about stuff, right? Same quote unquote room, you know, we all were Zoom rooms at this point. But they were all in kind of, you know, organizing, talking about their experience, talking about their concerns and thinking about where we go from here. That's got to be a model going forward. That's also the reason why they want to have more of these town halls before the beginning of the semester. Because, you know, as we get closer to the beginning of the school year, whether you're talking about, you know, higher education or K through 12, stress levels are going up for everybody, right? So I hope you'll tune in. What's nice about also the live show is that on the Podbean app, which we broadcast through, they have the ability to have not only have guests, right, for the audio, but also to have calls. Right. So if, you know, you join there, you can have, you sign in, whatever, and you can actually say, okay, I want to call in. There's a little button. You just call in and it kind of rings. Now, you're all doing through the app. You're not doing necessarily, like, you're not calling a separate number on your phone. If you're doing it right there on the app, people can call in. Last week on the show, we really talked about kind of the back to school stuff. And Steve from out in Shippensburg, Steve Haas, who's been organizing some, been helping organize some of the a petition drive out there against the kind of, you know, going back to the meat grinder without adequate protection in the fall. He teaches at Shippensburg University. He talked a little about that petition, a little bit of kind of what they're doing. And that's what we hope we can do for that show. So hope you tune in for that on Monday. What else we got? Yeah, so Edinburgh University, the latest posh university to go all remote in the fall, they just kind of brought up their announcements. I'm going to say this right now. Let me go look at, just to make sure that I'm not getting overtaken by the news. This happens so much on Fridays because we'll do this. I want to make sure that they're still. Nope. Kutztown University is still planning on a reopen. Yep, they got the full plan there. What I found interesting this week that came out of Kutztown University is that, look, I hear a lot about what's going on with like on the ground, right? I've talked about this on the show on Monday about how the administration has basically got a lot of plans. And you probably heard me talk about this. Basically what they released on their return to campus plan is a PR document, right? It's a PR document that basically says, hey, you know, everybody's got to be responsible for themselves, right? Except we don't really need to ensure we have a safe workplace. We're gonna say a bunch of good things, and we're gonna say we're gonna abide by, but how we're gonna do that, it's not exactly clear. They say they've been working on it since whatever March, and why don't you have the details available now? And so they're slowly trickling out these kind of range of different details, right? But the details almost always have to do with telling parents about how students will be safe and how they will get access to particular kinds of resources. When faculty or staff members have been asking about how they are going to be kept safe, right? That gets like into the gray areas. Oh, wait a minute. Wait, you, who, what you, oh, that's right. We got to worry about workers too, right? About, yeah, forgot about that. We're worried about the students because they're the ones who pay the tuition dollars. And so like, we have to make sure that we approach them. We figured you guys would just kind of figure it out and stuff and do something on your own, right? Meanwhile, we get daily, I began collecting these now because we get daily emails from the provost of the university. It's called like coronavirus green stage updates. And you know what that update is? It's freaking like Pinterest quotes to like feel good quotes about how there's no constant but change. And we have to be patient with change because we don't know what's going to be on the, I mean, all this freaking nonsense. And like, that's what you're doing. You're spending your time sending out emails about, you know, let me give you a Pinterest quote. Guess what? Other people have got Pinterest. They don't need your freaking Pinterest quotes on there. What they need are concrete plans that are going to keep them safe. Right. And she's a biologist too, as well. She should know better. Anyways. So I also know there's also a bunch of movements afoot on the Kutztown University campus, and I know it's several universities where faculty are beginning organizing to push back because it's just – this is unconscionable, right? And it is my firm belief that this is, again, another opportunity to tear the veil off this freaking family narrative that the university, Kutztown University, uses and lots of other universities use – and expose them for their freaking administrative lies, their market fundamentalism, the lack of concern of workers and students, and like actual material ways. Like, of course they're going to, oh, we care so much. Of course you freaking abstractly care so much, right? But how long did it take you to have like accessible ramps and doors in some of the buildings? Oh, it took a lawsuit, right? You cared about those students who were in wheelchairs that couldn't get down from the second floor in case of a fire. You cared about them in an abstract way. You felt deeply for them, but there was no freaking ramps. There was no way to get out in a case of a fire from the second floor. A student of mine had to help and organize to sue the university in order to get them to have a solution to that. Again, I'm not going to go all into this and go into a huge tangent on this. You've heard me do this 1,000 times on this show, going through example after example about how they have great PR words, but they have crappy practices. So people are organizing, and this is a great opportunity to pull that veil right off, right? Scrub that PR document down to its nonsense core and talk about what we really need to materially to keep people safe and organize a university in such a way that it actually gives a shit about people. How about that? That's where we go. I know locally we're really concerned here in Bucks County. In the Pembridge School District, where our school district is still in the middle of trying to figure out whether or not what its mode is going to be. Is it going to be all online? Is it going to be all in person? Or is it going to be a hybrid? Right. And look, I've said this 1,000 times to different parents and friends. I'm not necessarily one that is going to jump on the side of school administrators. Okay, that's not my go-to position. However, in this situation, what I have to say, number one, they've been doing a pretty damn good job in being transparent in their communications about where they are and stuff. And given the fact that there is no federal funding that is going to come for to support measures to keep people safe, given the fact that there's no kind of concrete guidance from our state, right? Really specific stuff that every administrator has to do it on their own, right? And it sounds great as a soundbite. You know, we got to realize the people locally know it best. Yeah, but you know what? This stuff costs money and has impacts, right? And without clear guidance from the kind of where the experts are supposed to be concentrated, It's like, I mean, I don't know how you sleep at night, right, as a school administrator at this point. Like, knowing that what decisions that you're going to have are going to have consequences for people, whether it's parents who are, again, we don't have universal child care, so parents who are now going to figure out what the hell to do with their kids if it's all online. Parents who are, you know, schools are not responsible for kind of running high-speed internet to every home in the area. No, that should be a community, like state, federal initiative. But guess what? Right? My school district, people in my school just certainly don't have, like, you know, lots of extra money in their bank accounts to go out there and kind of like install like high-speed internet fiber optic cable for everyone in their community. Come on. It's freaking nonsense. And so there's going to be a disparate impact on those students who already struggle, right? Not because of fault of their own, but because they are poor. And we live in a dog-eat-dog market fundamentalist world that throws poor people or lower-middle-class people or middle-class people to the wolves the first chance they get. And so that school administrator's got that in the back of their head too as well. What happens to those kids? I mean, in our school district, they've been able to keep the school lunch program going. So they've been providing meals to families all summer long, right? Every Thursday, families can come and they can pick up meals that will get them through the week. I mean, but at the end of the day, there is no good solution here. And these decisions got to be made. I mean, Central Bucks School District, they were going to go with this hybrid model and they were going to have that. And they just, boom, flipped it. They went did a 180 if they saw the increase in cases. And I actually, personally, just whatever, for whatever it's worth, is my two cents. I mean, I'm not in their position, but they did an interesting thing. My neighbor was actually arguing for this and saying that this is what our school district should do. They say the high schools and potentially the middle schools, I don't remember exactly, but the high schools, they're going all online, right? And they're going to spread out the elementary schools across those schools, right? So, and the reason why they're doing this, and this makes a lot of sense, right, is because there were guidances that came from the county, right, here in Bucks County, that said, you know, well, you know, we're going to social distance 6 feet between students when practicable, right, when it's possible, but we're going to do at least really 3 feet social distancing. Now, 3 feet social distancing, that's insane. That's not based on science. That's not based on medical recommendations. That is based on how many kids they have in the limited space that they have. That is a no-win situation. That's bad. And there's a report that came out after a study of what was going on in South Korea, in Korea, what was happening there. They're finding out that older kids spread the virus at the pretty much about the same rate as adults do. However, that's not the case with the youngest kids. Right. So your K-5 students, K-6. Right. So and the K-6 students, that's where the socialization and the aspect of what happens in schooling is most impactful. Right. Is most important. So what they basically said, OK, look, you have the older kids, their potential, they could potentially cause an explosion of the virus. So it doesn't keep them safe or their family safe. But they're older and they can do more management. They're able to kind of stay home alone. Again, not ideal solution. And work from home, right? Be more self-guided at that point. Right? So those students are going to stay there. They're still going to be doing school, still like, but it's going to be all online. And the K through six students or K-5 students will be kind of spread out among them so that they can ensure social distancing in that district. Right. But that's one school district. And look, I mean, Central Bucks, that's one of the wealthier school districts in the area. Right. So I shouldn't say wealthy, but it's well funded. Let's put it that way. Right. You've got wealthy areas around Central Bucks. They're able to do that. That's not so much the case in other school districts. Right. It doesn't have the same kind of facility unless you have an organized plan. Right. That's happening at a much broader level. But we don't have that. So the anxiety is just going to increase as we move closer to the fall. So this is another thing for, you know, for folks in the future. If you tune into the live broadcast on Fridays, YouTube, you have the ability to comment on the YouTube page. I'd love to hear your comments and feedbacks, things that's going through your mind. On the Monday shows, we're hoping to be able to take your calls, right? Well, not hoping, but that's what we're looking for. We're hoping to hear from you because, you know, look, we need perspectives and stories. We need people to kind of come in and say, you know, what's it look like on the ground from where you're at, right? What are your concerns, right? And what I hope that can move into, what we can start doing with that call-in show, is to not kind of think you're going to call in with a question. You know, it's like, let's never listen to NPR. That's what they do. You're going to call in. My question is, and you have to tell them what your question is. You come in, you ask this question, and it's really this kind of performative thing. Right, where we have the opportunity, because we don't have the strictures of kind of like this rigid show, the show environment, we can have more of a conversation. Right, I'm interested in knowing what's happening with people out there. Like, what are your concerns? Right, especially from folks that, you know, are not in my neighborhood, folks that are not in my area, that are in different parts of the state. So do kind of make sure everybody knows about this. Right, kind of get the word out for me. I'd love it. So anyways, I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with this week's last call. I want to remind everybody, become a member of Raging Chicken. Go to patreon.com/RC Press today. Become a member as little as $5 a month. We'll be back right after this with this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RCPress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/RCPress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody. It's Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. This week's last call, where we talk space news, beer news, whatever else is going on. And why I got that frog in my throat, I don't know. Look, just one bit of space news this week. Again, like, I've been kind of locked in my reflections this week, but kind of exciting. I'm excited about it. It's NASA's Perseverance Mars rover expected to launch on Thursday, July 30th. And this one has got an expected life of 14 years on the surface of Mars. It's going to be able to explore a much wider range of places. It's got more advanced instrumentation that's on it, but it's still designed of, you know, you've seen the Curiosity rover and that kind of stuff. It looks very similar to that. But it will be launching on July 30th. One of the differences here is it's got a nuclear power source. And you can see where that's coming from, right? I mean, because, like, you got a nuclear power source, you're not relying upon the sun, right? And that was one of the things we lost opportunity because of, got caught in a dust storm, never restarted. But here, you're not relying upon the sun, so you can explore a much wide range of parts of the planet. But it does also mean that you are sending your putting a nuclear power source in a rover on a rocket that has to launch with no problems. So that's my only one concern of that stuff. But, you know, here we go. But we'll be launching from Cape Canaveral in Florida, and some my fingers crossed that they don't everything goes fine, and then we're going to see where this is going to go. I also, you know, to mention, there's also the as I've been checking out the comment, right? You've been checking out the comment. We have a couple nights of we've been trying to get the family to go out and kind of check out the comet. But it's every night we anything that we seem to want to go out and see, it just doesn't work out. It's too cloudy, whatever it is. But the comet NEOWISE, if you haven't seen it, you can see it in the evening now. It used to be you just could see it in the dawn, but you can see it right as the sun goes down. You go off and you look towards the Big Dipper. And it's off in that direction of the sky. So I'm hoping to be able to see it live. It's not going to come back for another 1,000 years or so. So this is your shot if you do want to see it. So there's that in there. One thing that I did do this week is, I'm always talking up what's going on at Free Will, right? Free Will Brewing. They're in my hometown. I'm always going to support a hometown brewery, right? I love their beer too. It's not just because it's not just here. If it was here and it was crappy, that'd be one thing, but it's not by any stretch of the imagination. They've got just phenomenal beer. So I'm always kind of, championing our kind of local, and plus, let you know some of the good things that they have out, and I'll kind of tell you a little bit about them today. But, I was thinking about, I don't know why. What got me thinking about it, but I decided that you know what, I just want to check out some other ones. And I know that they had done some Free Will had done some collabs with Levante Brewing, and started following Levante Brewing. It's kind of interesting. It's down in Westchester, PA, kind of not too far away. Some place that I hope to be able to visit at some point. That's one thing I'm doing, compiling coronavirus and combining places that I want to visit and to bring back and talk a little bit on the podcast. But so what I did is I ordered them, right? Levante Brewing. If you go to their website. There'll be a link in the show notes for that. If you go to their website, you can actually order their beer just like with Free Will. You can order online and they can ship it to you. I ordered a nice little Levante glass. You've been following our Instagram. You've seen it. So I had three of them, right? So I had Tropical Whip, right? It was a pineapple sundae IPA. Dope, D-O-P-E, all caps, is an acronym, Doctrine of Phonetic Equivalence, and an which is a triple IPA, and then Tickle Parts, Northeast IPA. So let me take you through them. So I'll give you my sense of them, because first of all, in general, they were awesome. Okay. In general, I absolutely love this beer. All right. The Tropical Whip, I'll start there. Right. So, here's the breakdown of it. It says you hold in your hand a liquid plane ticket, a creamy, sweet southbound escape. Four hop varieties created distinct layer of citrus juiciness finished with pineapple and banana purees blended in. Tropical Whip tastes like the color of the wind. Contains lactose, pineapple, banana, and vanilla. And it comes in on at 6.9 ABV. It was canned on the 8th of July. That was super. And it is. I mean, I'm telling you, this is the kind of what was great about this beer. It's been incredibly hot this week. At least where I'm sitting right now, it has been hot, humid, horrible. This beer was fantastic with that, right? It's got a nice little it's interesting because you can taste there's something about like all their brews, right? That you can see this as a mark of Levante Brewing, right? So there's this creaminess to it was kind of consistent across all of these, which I really liked. And sometimes with some of these, when you get pineapple and banana things, I've had, some of these where they have a bitterness to them too as well. This one doesn't. This one has got that little bite, right, that you get from, because it's, an IPA. You get that bite, but the sweetness makes it, and there's just like creaminess to it, which is really nice. And the pineapple is not overbearing. The banana, this is one thing I was worried about, is like, when you take the banana, it's like banana can be so sweet that it can be sickly. There's just enough banana in there where it kind of gives you that sweet creaminess, but doesn't kind of log in. So highly recommend that one. Yeah, highly recommend that one. The second one I had was Dope. This is the Doctrine of Phonetic Equivalence. And unfortunately, it is no longer available on their store. So it was a quick brew, but it was so good. So let me give you the readout of this one. It was a triple IPA, right? It's a 100% cryo hop triple IPA. It's comes at 11.7 ABV, I'll give you their description. Imperceptible as massive malt sweetness fuses with a dense, dank, and tropical combination of cryo, citra, mosaic, and Simcoe hops. This ain't beer, it's dope. Contains lactose. So when they say this, like the 11.7 is almost entirely imperceptible. That's absolutely true. Is that you get a heavy, you get a high ABV content beer like that with that kind of alcohol in it. A lot of times it can be that really kind of like alcohol-y, right? Really, that's just kind of front and center. This drank like something with like about half of that in it, with a super, super creaminess in it. It's got a great color to it, right? Especially you hit it in the light. It's got this kind of like nice yellow, yellow cloud like to it, right? So it's it's like a translucent feel, and it drinks deliciously. I was surprised by it. Especially again, it's been a really hot week, and usually with something with an ABV like 11.7 is like, you know, a week like this, I'm like, that's not what it does. This was beautiful. It was wonderful. So I hope that, I don't know if that's just going to be just like a one-off and they're going to be done with it. They're going to be coming back to it. But if it does come back, I'll try to let you know, because that was absolutely super. And the final one, best name out there, Tickle Parts. Yes, that is a Northeast IPA. That is in stock, right? So give me this. Tickle Parts is exceptionally dry-hopped New England IPA with low bitterness, rising hop aroma, and feathery soft mouthfeel. Anticipate chunks of pineapple and tender clementine juices on the palate, while your nostrils are gently tickled with the aroma of thawing sorbet and other fruit juices. And that comes in at 7% ABV. Again, these are all four-pack cans that I'm giving you. And one, great name. Two, they got a glass with it, too, a glass that you can get, too. It's got this nice little smiley face on it. Also awesome. But this beer was great. This beer was great. And I think this is more one of their kind of staples right now. It's just a fabulous beer. Great. Let's say talk about feathery soft mouthfeel. Again, it was nice and creamy. Given how it had so much like of the dry hop in it, you got none of that real bitey bitterness, although the bitterness is there, like in a way that you want it. It's really nice stuff. So, if you get a chance, you want to go out and kind of support them, you can go to their website, and that's levantebrewing.com. If you want to go right to their shop, you can go there. It's levantebrewing.com/collections/buy-cans-online. Easiest thing to do is just go to levantebrewing.com and go to their shop, and that'll hit you right there. They got some really cool things out there. Probably not going to be ordering stuff this week, but I'm very interested in a whole bunch of what they got out there. Especially right now, there's this one I think it just came out. I'm seeing three additional new releases here. One is called a Strata Bebop Passion Shake IPA. That looks really interesting. What that one is, it is, let's see. Yeah, it's got some orange, grapefruit, and strawberry kind of stuff in there. 7% ABV. Some other really cool stuff that looks good is the Strata Swerve Double IPA. That looks nice. That one's not listed as one of their brand new ones, but it's there. Strataphonic, another IPA, and Monstra Strata that comes in like a crowler. So do check them out. I like the fact that it's kind of rooted in a community. I like the fact that they've been doing some good work and some collabs with the folks up here at Free Will. That was my expansion for my coronavirus quarantine. So definitely cool. So Free Will, if you want to know what's going on at Free Will right now, what did I just do with the link? Here we go. They've got one thing I will strongly, strongly recommend. That is just out, newly offered once again, is the strawberry mango mash. Now, last year they had a strawberry mash that was absolutely fantastic. If you've been listening consistently to the show, you know I was raving about this last summer. They come out with it right about this time. I think it was a little bit earlier last year. I did not expect to like it. I thought the strawberry was going to be way too sweet right here. No. It was phenomenal. It blew my mind, right? I mean, like, people got sick and tired of hearing me talking about it around my house, right? Because, like, it's like, this thing is awesome. Because, if you have an actual strawberry, right, the actual strawberry has got that bite to it, right? And this stuff, when you have something with strawberry flavor in it, my experience has been it tends to be really sickly sweet, or you don't really taste the strawberry at all. Not this stuff. This stuff is freaking amazing. Now, I'm pretty sure last year it was just a strawberry mash. This is a strawberry mango mash. So This is going to be brand new. I'm totally looking for it. This one is a sour ale with strawberry, mango, vanilla, and milk sugar. And it comes in at 7.5 ABV. I'm all on board that one. I haven't had this version of it yet, so I can't vouch for it, but I'll put money on it because last year's was so good. Interesting thing, they also have released their Scarecrow. This usually comes out in the fall. It's an autumn spice wheat ale with vanilla, cinnamon, nutmeg, and allspice. Not exactly sure where they came out with this, and they even acknowledged it on their social media, being like, yeah, no, it's a little early this year. I get it, but, you know, you'll be surprised. So that is available for those of you who are looking there. I'm not ready to go to fall spices yet. I'll tell you, I'll just be straight up. I'm not going to let grow this summer very, very easily. And the last one I'll kind of say, hey, you know what? This one deserves a shout out is the Mango Enrobed. I got that one a couple weeks ago, and that's a really nice beer. So, or maybe it was last week, because that's a really nice beer too as well. That's also available on their store. You can go to freewillbrewing.store and you can order it there. You can also get some real cool merch out right now. They got a brand new glass, which is called it's a Nordic cooler glass. It's got a nice little summer scene on it, a couple beach chairs and an umbrella on it. Looks like a really nice glass. So might want to give that a shot too as well. Last bit of news. Yes, I know lots of beer news this week, but right here in you recall Free Will Brewing. We've talked about this on the show. Free Will Brewing, they've kind of expanded their offerings in a way, building again, it's this collaborative way of kind of thinking about stuff. Hold on a sec. By working with Haymaker Meadery, right? So they have mead now that's available there, and the Haymaker Meadery has moved to Perkasie. Build up on that collaboration. Well, we just got the announcement. We just found out, I think it was last week, maybe week before, that Perkasie is getting a new brewery. Yeah, that's right. This is Mystic Ways Brewing Company. So that'll be the second kind of like craft brewery, microbrewery in the area. It is, I'll give you the basis of it. So Mystic Ways Brewing Company, Perkasie's second microbrewery. It's a family-owned and operated microbrewery brewing in the town center district at 510.5 West Walnut Street. That just happens to be the actually former house of one of my son's best friends who just moved out of the area not too long ago. So that's going to be a brewery now. But Mystic Ways' goal is to create a unique and captivating brewery that provides quality ales, superb service, and its customers. Brewery is owned by Alice Creer. I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher some of these names. Angie Winiarski, who's the daughter. Joe Winiarski, the son, and his wife, Florence D'Amelia. Joe Winiarski basically he's been a master brewer. It's kind of moving to the way. I just want to give you a sense of what they're saying they're going to do. So Mystic Ways Brewing's company's mission is to be recognized in the community as a leading and distinctive maker of quality beer while collaborating with other local businesses. Quote, Mystic Ways will use only the highest ingredients, highest quality and freshest ingredients, commented brewer Joe Winiarski. We utilize lesser known and cutting edge techniques for dry hopping and carbonating our beer, giving it a smoother aroma, flavor, and feel. Our custom brews range from IPAs oozing with the latest aromatic hops to robust stouts with coffee, chocolate, and vanilla flavors to crisp pilsners and a slight honey-like taste, just dry enough to leave you wanting more. That's like from here. So that came out from our in our borough kind of newsletter, and that's a good promo. They just passed that. So it is right now, I can tell you, because it was my like I said, my son's friend's house before. He used to run the Game Inn, which is now up in Quakertown. The Game Inn used to do, you know, video games and kind of associated stuff, kind of secondhand traded and that kind of stuff. You can buy some new stuff too, but lots of secondhand stuff. They're up in Quakertown. So it's going to be that space, but that used to have a storefront and there was an apartment behind it, but it was a basement and stuff. So I'm not sure how that's going to work in the configuration. They just got the approval to go ahead and start that. So, that's great news. I will be following that, and maybe we could even get some of the brewer on to talk a little bit about it at some point. We don't know when the opening is going to be because it sounds like they just got to go ahead to begin construction and reconfiguring of that space. They are talking about having there's going to be a tap room there and a beer garden, which I'm curious about where that's going to be situated. So They don't have a whole lot of social media presence. It looks like they're just starting getting that up and running now, so it gives you a sense of where they are in that process. But you can like them on Facebook or go to Mystic Ways Brewing Company. They are there. There's no content. I'll tell you that up front. But I'm excited to see that we're going to get a second one, a second brewery right here in Perkasie. It's a little town of Perkasie, right? So we've got kind of going to have two breweries. We've got the Meadery, which is going to be here now. There's also going to be a new restaurant that's opening up kind of really just like literally down the street from where this is going to be. It's going to be called The Ram because it's Penridge Rams. Right. I'm not a huge fan of the name. I'll say that. But they're going to have rooftop. They're going to have like rooftop seating and supposedly a really good craft beer list. So we shall see. And I fully imagine the Ram will take full advantage of having two breweries right here in the town in order to get stuff, fresh stuff on tap. So I'm very excited about that. So anyways, that's all I got for this week. I really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Sean should be back next week. And like I say, we'll see how the audio works on this for next week because it's my computer is probably going to be in the shop. So look forward to it. So everybody kind of stay healthy, stay safe. I know everybody is itching to kind of get back to some degree of normality, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. Also, if you get a chance, spread the word about our show on Monday. It's Monday at 7 p.m. The link will be available on our Facebook page. It'll be posted up on our Twitter account. In addition, if you click follow the link that I'll be sending out for to the Podbean one, you can actually directly participate in the conversation. It will be streaming live on our YouTube channel too as well. There'll be a link in the show description to take you to the place where you can call in. So it should be a fun time. We're also looking at, you may have remember this from last week. I talked about this on Monday too as well, was that we're looking to bring in doing some more interviews, some kind of shorter shows for kind of midweek to get us through the hump. And of course, we'll always be back here on Friday. Again, we're going for around 10:30 every Friday morning to be broadcasting live. All right. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. It's been quite a week. And once again, I just want to give my condolences to Michael Brooks' family, friends, and you know, everyone at the Majority Report. We're feeling it with you. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back Monday. Have a good one, everybody. See ya.
Actually mean to be truly global to the extent we can, local, national, and international simultaneously, east, west, north, south, but from a place of actual growth and empathy. And this is where, again, this questions of consciousness come in. The questions of cultivating empathy, cultivating compassion, cultivating awareness, the complete antithesis of social media modes, long-term thinking, compassion, seeing complexity, comfort with oneself, solitude, the opposite of instant gratification, the attempt to constantly humanize and not dehumanize your fellow humans. These are all completely countervailing forces to the market technologic that subsumes all of us today.